I'm Steve Clark with Dr. Art Evans, entomologist, and this is What's Bugging You, a fond look at the animals we love to hate.
Joining us today from KUOW in Seattle, bug chef and author of The Secret Life of Slugs and Snails, Life in the Very Slow Lane, my good friend, David George Gordon.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Well, David, you're my first guest on What's Bugging You, so welcome. I thought you could maybe tell us a little bit about how you got started with this penchant you seem to have for writing about the spineless wonders.
You know, my history with writing about the charismatic microfauna actually goes back many years, about 15 or so. I was actually working on a series of books for a publisher in Seattle, Sasquatch Books, and I wrote a book called The Field Guide to the Slug.
That's where I first heard of you, because that was a book I owned before I met you.
Yeah, and I think our paths actually crossed at the Invertebrates in Captivity Conference.
That's right.
In Arizona, where I was giving a paper on how to keep banana slugs mm-hmm. as pets or exhibit animals in this case.
That's right.
That was a big departure for me, because prior to that, I'd been writing about things like bald eagles and orca whales and stuff that people already know are kind of wonderful and fascinating. When I wrote Field Guide to the Slug, it was news to a lot of people that these were actually interesting creatures besides garden pests. And I got a lot of good feedback from people saying how they couldn't look at slugs and snails the same way again after reading that book. The New York Times reviewed it. They actually called it gripping. And you know, they also talked about my almost breathtaking depiction of slug sex. So that was kind of encouragement for an aspiring writer. And it showed me that there is a real market in writing about stuff that people kind of tend to overlook, as you say, the creatures that we love to hate. And I followed that book with a book that I wrote about cockroaches called The Complete Cockroach.
Well, that's where we met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was going to say, Art, and I think that's when we really created a friendship, because I, of course, came to the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County, where you were working at the time, and kind of picked your brain politely about everything you knew about cockroaches.
Which was a very short conversation, as I recall.
Well, except it did lead me to the men's room on the second floor, where there were cockroaches peeking out of the tiles. So that was kind of interesting in itself.
Right.
And I think that's actually in the book.
Mm-hmm.
That you can see cockroaches on exhibit and off exhibit at that museum. But that book then, in turn, led me to writing the book that I'm probably best known for, the Eat a Bug Cookbook, which has 33 recipes for cooking with everything from little tiny termites and ants all the way up to big tarantula spiders. And that book actually came out almost 13 years ago. And believe it or not, I still get telephone calls and emails on a pretty regular basis asking if I'm available to do cooking demonstrations or to weigh in on this kind of growing interest in the whole, I don't know what you call it, practice of entomophagy, or bug eating, as we call it, around the world.
Well, you've done quite a bit of traveling in promoting that book and sharpening your skills as a bug chef extraordinaire.
You know, one of the things I learned that's extremely difficult, I have great respect for people like Emeril or Bobby Flay. It's hard to talk, be intelligent, and cook at the same time. So having done that for a lot at this point, by my recent tally, 30 states and 3 foreign countries.
Where have you traveled recently?
Recently, I've been so wrapped up in doing a promotion for my new book, The Secret World of Slugs and Snails, that I haven't done that much in the way of cooking. But I have a lot coming up. I'll be in Los Angeles at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County in May doing cooking demonstrations as part of their bug fair. It's an annual event.
Well, tell us about The Secret Life of Slugs and Snails, Life in the Very Slow Lane. How did that come together, and who was your intended audience?
You know, The Field Guide to the Slug had been written in 1995, and it was actually right on the edge of when the Internet was coming in. I remember actually sending off one of my first emails to a conference asking if I could get onto the schedule after the book had been published. But the Internet wasn't anywhere near what it is these days. I decided when Field Guide to the Slug went out of print that I really wanted to do a reworking and expansion of that book, which ultimately turned into the Secret World of Slugs and Snails. But it was amazing to me, being able to harness the might of the Internet, how much information I was able to pick up on that was not in the original book. Not necessarily because it was recent, it just was inaccessible at the time. So that book went, instead of working on the 48-page field guide that I developed, to work on a full-length book, it actually became a challenge, as in, where do you want to cut off the flow of information here? Because there's way more than can get into this book. The book itself is, to my mind, is wonderful because my wife, Karen Luke Fields, did all the illustrations for it.
Oh, excellent.
So they're great pen and ink drawings as well.
Those books are always more meaningful when it's a family effort.
It's kind of like our little baby, so I really am happy about that.
Well, that's great. So what are you working on next? I know you're still in the middle of promoting one book, but what are you thinking about?
I always have five or six projects whirring around in my brain at the same time. One of those projects would be an even further expansion of Secret World of Slugs and Snails, and really zone in on kind of the microfauna in your backyard and what gardeners know and don't know. For example, you see those carabid beetles, those black predaceous tiger beetles running around in your yard quite often, at least in the Northwest, when you're digging around in the soil. But you don't know, one doesn't know whether you should be swatting at them or encouraging them. Well, us savvy gardeners know that actually they're a good thing because they're predaceous and they're actually looking for things like small slugs or snails or other insects that they can sink their mouth parts into and dispatch.
I know those tiger beetles. You could call it the ode to Omis.
And aren't they one of the fastest moving land animals? I think they
not that particular genus, but there are others that are pretty fleet on their feet. That's for sure.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if Steve has any questions for you. I think he was kind of curious to know more about your dabblings in entomophagy.
Yes, let's definitely talk some recipes here.
Well, certainly. But first, I sent a little audio clip from Time Bandits. Did you listen to that?
Oh, yes, I did. I thought that was wonderful. Thanks so much for sharing that. It was kind of the reverse on the Haldane quote about an inordinate fondness for beetles. If there is a God, what can we learn about him from the insect world? That he had an inordinate fondness for beetles is his reply. So this was the question. Yeah, why would God create slugs? And, you know, the Time Bandits script writers didn't get a chance to ask me my answer to that, so I'm going to give it to you right now. When we look at animals in terms of their value, we're usually talking about what value are they to us, people. So that rules out a lot. You know, what's the value of a mosquito? Really hard to say. But when you look at slugs and snails, particularly the ones that aren't preying in your own garden, most of those, by the way, are non-native, have been introduced, and are problems because of that. But slugs and snails serve many important functions. They're decomposers. They help to break down dead and decaying plant material and put it back into the forest floor as nutrients. They're also food for lots of other organisms, everything from those carabid beetles, those small black beetles that we were talking about, all the way up to big stuff like raccoons who might be eating snails. They find raccoons with their bellies full of those pesky snails. But they're also plant pollinators. There are a lot of studies that show that slugs, you know, they're pretty much wrapped up in slime. And if their slime contains pollen, they can disperse it by, I don't know, 30 or 40 feet, where it then gets into other plants. And we'd probably miss those plants if we didn't have the slugs and snails to help out.
Interesting. Now, I seem to recall in The Secret Life of Slugs and Snails, you have an essay about raising snails as escargot.
Yeah, it's called Grow Your Own Escargot. And it's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. I mentioned before that a lot of the species of slugs and snails that we have in our gardens are not native to North America. They are brought here by accident, in most cases, in plant material, in their eggs or the actual animals themselves, attached to plants that were then transported here from Europe or Eurasia. And one in particular, the helix snail, Helix aspersa,
right,
is a non-native that was introduced perhaps intentionally by a gentleman in San Jose, California in the 1800s. He was from France, and he thought what this country really needs is a good escargot snail. So those helix snails, and we have them all over the Seattle area, those actually are one of two kinds of escargot snails commonly eaten in France. So while you're out collecting them, before they eat all of your vegetable starts and your cilantro and things like that, if you collect those and actually put them in a bucket, purge them by letting them eat cornmeal for a little while, and then prepare them, you can actually get a pretty good meal out of the deal.
What's the cornmeal about? How does that
Well, you know, Yeah, if they're sitting around eating dead plant parts or live plant parts for that matter, it's nice to get them to eat something that will pass through relatively quickly, and you know where it's been. That's the idea with that.
That way they're clean as a whistle.
Exactly.
Well, you do the same thing with clams.
Do you?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, because you don't want all the sand and stuff that they've been filter feeding out. You basically would like their crops or their stomach areas to be empty.
So in terms of your bug chef experiences, do you eat insects and other arthropods at home?
You know, I'm usually only eating insects and those other land arthropods at home when I'm working on new recipes.
I thought you were going to say while you're working in the backyard.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. There's just so many. We're fortunate in North America. We have such a broad palate from which to choose, you know, in terms of what we want to eat. There are certainly insects that I really enjoy, waxworms being my all-time favorite, but I don't usually keep them around the house. I have a freezer full of stuff that's reserved for my cooking demonstrations, and the rest of it is mostly for entertaining friends when they pop in if they're up for a culinary adventure or, like I said, for developing new recipes.
Any travels coming up or any other thoughts about entomophagy? That's certainly in the news a lot lately. UN
in fact,
is looking at it.
Well, I will say that recently the Wall Street Journal ran an article following up on all this interest that has recently come about that raising insects would be less harmful to the planet than raising cattle or pigs. They ran a story that was looking at, well, if that's the case, here's where you can get insects to start doing it yourself. And quoted me extensively and actually ran a recipe from the Eat a Bug cookbook.
Excellent.
So it seems to me that we're actually on another crest of another wave as people are looking at bug eating from an environmental perspective, which is a good thing to do.
Would you eat a cheeseburger?
I had a wonderful interview once with a woman who had just arrived. She had come to Seattle by way of Boston, but she was from Delhi, India. And when she arrived, in the United States, she saw a big sign that said hamburgers and cheeseburgers. And she said, well, I'm a vegetarian. I'd like a cheeseburger. Not realizing, oh, my gosh, there is meat on this. And so she had to return it. I'm sorry, I can't eat this. There is meat on this cheeseburger.
Well, so, what about you?
Cultural. Oh, I'll definitely eat cheeseburgers. I live down the block from Dick's Drive-In, which is one of the great hot spots here in Seattle. And people know me by name there.
Well, David,
I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
I really appreciate you spending some time with us on What's Bugging You, and I look forward to seeing you in May at the 25th anniversary of the Bug Show at the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles County.
That's going to be a wonderful event. I encourage all of your listeners to plunk down their cash on plane tickets and get out there in the, I think it's the middle of May for that event.
May 14th
Should
and
be
15th.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Art. Thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun.
This is a real treat. You're my first guest, and this has been a lot of fun. I couldn't think of anybody else I wanted to start out with but David George Gordon.
I'm putting that on my resume. Thank you. All right.